Webcasting around the world from the desert metropolis of Phoenix, Arizona, this is The Dividing Line. The Apostle Peter commanded Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give that answer with gentleness and reverence. Our host is Dr. James White, Director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. This is a live program, and we invite your participation. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, call now at 602-973-4602 or toll free across the United States. It's 1-877-753-3341. And now with today's topic, here is James White.
And good afternoon. Welcome to The Dividing Line. I cannot hear myself at all, but that's okay. That's how we start things off on the program, each and every Dividing Line. Once you flip the switch, things work differently than when you don't flip the switch. I guess that's what it is. I can handle not hearing myself. Anyways, I was just thinking about playing some of this thing here, and then I realized, unfortunately, when you reinstall your system, that there's no way to do that. Because all the stuff that I had on my sticky notes are gone. I mean, they're still there someplace, but I had to do all this mental gymnastics to figure out how to get that program to work, and I can't do that while being on the air at the same time. So, yeah, I was noticing that. So, anyway, 877-753-3341. I don't honestly remember where we were in the Patterson stuff. Might just throw it in the middle someplace and. But for those of you, see, if I talk loud enough, then it breaks through it. And if I go down there, whatever you just did changed everything. I'm out of the mushy, yicky stuff, and now I can actually hear something. So everybody's looking at me. I don't touch the stuff. That's the guy over there. Point to that guy over there that likes all the lights and things like that. I don't go over there and play with that stuff. Don't look at me. Anyways, we have yet more announcements to make real quick here, but no music to play. So let's go ahead and once again bring on Mr. Alaska. Hi, Mike. Hello.
I'm on.
You're on.
Oh, I didn't want that to happen.
Oh, well.
Anyway, as you know, I'm sorry.
It says on my screen, bring Mike on for just a bit. I'm doing what I was told to do, you know?
Okay. You call why?
Well, because I don't have real One Player installed on my computer, so
I thought we had an announcement line. Here, you know?
The most expensive real One listener around. I guess we do have some announcements here that are very important, and that's that we are running out of inventory right now on our Alaskan cruise. As you know...
Now, explain to folks, inventory sounds like books and CDs and things like that. You're in that industry. What is inventory?
Inventory means cabins.
Ah, you mean space.
And the problem is, folks, is that we are basically the only game in town right now. If you want to sign on for this particular cruise, you can't get on Travelocity or Expedia or even through Princess itself. We are the only ones holding cabins right now. And in a very, very bad way, Princess would like to get some of those cabins back. But not only that, but we are filling up quickly. And as soon as we run out of cabins, folks, we're done. There ain't no more cabins.
Mm.
And I'm about ready to send out an email to a lot of our past cruisers just to explain, you know, this is not just about an Alaskan cruise and hanging out and seeing what Dr. White eats during a week.
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, I mean, you have an interesting, you know, selection of foods that you usually stick with. But
you mean a less than interesting selection of foods that I stick with? Isn't that what you really mean?
Hamburgers and steak.
Well,
tacos.
Believe me, I was looking for the tacos on the last trip, man. I was looking all over the place. We were on a Mexican trip and we didn't have any tacos. It just didn't make any sense.
Yes, as the waiter comes by and says, "So would you like some caviar?" He says, "No, you have any salsa?" No.
Can I get some salt for these chips, please, there, brother? Thank you. Appreciate that.
No, but the thing is, folks, is that this is not even really like one of our regular past six cruises that we've done. This is really taking a whole other flavor to it, and and that being that there is going to be the onboard debate between Dr. James White and his partner, Dr. James Renahan, against John Dominic Crossan and Marcus Bork, who are two fellows, two scholars with the Jesus Seminar. This is not going to be an opportunity that you're going to even have to be able to listen to a CD or anything, because it will not be recorded while on board. So you get 7 days of apologetics, 7 days of praise and worship with Steve Camp. You get the onboard debate where you are the only ones that are going to ever hear that right there on the ship. And then also you get the beauty of Alaska going all the way up through the inside passage.
So what's the time frames here? What do we need to tell people so they've, you know, most folks need something concrete to look at.
I have negotiated with Princess. We had a March 1st deadline, which is just coming up in a couple days.
Yes.
We've moved that up to March 15th. So you have till March 15th to be able to go ahead, and all you got to do is just put down a $350 deposit. The final's not due till June 1st. So if it's a crunch thing or whatever, you do have a lot of time to be able to pay for the rest of it up until June 1st. But we just need you to, if you are planning on going, we're thinking about it, have been weighing it in your mind, we're expecting to talk to your spouse about it. Now is the time to do this. Otherwise, you probably will be out of, well, I don't want to say out of luck, but you'll be out of grace as far as that goes. You're not going to be able to get on the ship, and we want to make sure that we give the opportunity for everyone to be able to do that.
Right. All righty. Well, so it's going to be not going to be any open cabins on this cruise to Alaska.
No, I think it's going to be very similar. If you remember back a couple years ago, James, when we were on the Zondom and cruising the Eastern Caribbean, we ran out of cabins. And we had all sorts of upset people that couldn't get on board. Or when a couple did finally free up later on, the price was twice what ours was originally. So we just don't want to see you in that situation. We want to make sure that you folks get a chance to get on board with us and enjoy not only the 7 days with us in ministry, but also the debate on board, which is going to be historic.
That it will. All right, sir. Well, sorry to bring you on when you weren't expecting to, but I can only do what I'm told to do. You know what I mean?
Well, now if I can go back to listening to the program.
Well, that assumes I'm going to have something worthwhile to say. So yes, you can do that. So I will put you back on hold here, and thank you for joining us, sir. At least I tried to do that. I'll let the people on the other side. Well, it's flashing, so I guess that means that's the way. Thank you. All right. Well, anyway, yeah, you know, I wasn't going to talk about this. I've seen so far like three comments. You know, the big news today is Fox News is all over this one. The failing health of the Roman Pontiff is the big news of the day. And, you know, There are very few people who have my, I guess I would use the phrase, credentials as one who has opposed the Roman Catholic system and Roman Catholic theology. And obviously, I find it extremely offensive that the Roman Catholic Pope utilizes such terms as Holy Father, which Jesus only used of the Father himself, Vicar of Christ, who would be the Holy Spirit. There is nothing about the perversion of biblical truth that the papacy represents that I would even begin to accept or anything like that. But I've seen like three different jokes that have gone by about his current state, and I just not only do I just remind folks that there are people who sit in channel or they listen to us speaking, we don't know where they are, we don't know where they're coming from, we don't know what their issues are right now, and we would be in a really hard pressed to defend any kind of statement like that, but I just don't understand it. I mean I really don't. That's It's one thing to oppose the theology
it's something completely different to engage in. I just I understand it. It leaves me completely befuddled. And you know, obviously, what you do is you know, everyone knows that the current pontiff is not going to be living much longer. His pontificate has lasted longer than any other pope of recent memory. I've forgotten how long it's been since there was a pope that was sitting upon the chair of Peter in Rome, as they claim, for as long as this one. And there's going to be some major, major changes coming. There are no two ways about it. There's going to be some major league things coming down the pipe, and what we should be thinking about is how are we going to respond to that? You know, I start thinking about it, and I start thinking, man, evangelicalism is in bad shape as far as responding to what's going to be happening in Rome. Am I not right? If you're asking, well, why would you say that? Well, think about it. Responding to new challenges. And especially, let's come up with a theoretical situation here. Let's say the next pontiff, and generally, the man who comes in after a long, long pontificate, this isn't always the case, but historically anyways, a person who comes in after a long, long pontificate isn't going to be there long. And there's going to be a lot of displeasure about whatever he does because he's not the last guy. I mean, the last guy has what? He has built up, remember when Bush was elected, he said he has political capital to spend. And in essence, this pope has a lot of political capital, except it's more, well, part of it is political and part of it is religious. He's got a fair amount of capital just simply from having been pontiff for so long. The next guy has none of that. And, you know, it's like becoming the pastor of a church after someone, you know, who's sort of like, you know, built the place. You never want to be the next guy. I mean, that's the last thing on the planet you want to do, because everybody's going to be comparing you to the last guy. And the worst thing is if the last guy sticks around. That's not the issue with the papacy, of course, but if the last guy sticks around, that is the perfect recipe for a church split, or the second guy lasting about 6 months, and then he just pulls his hair out and runs screaming into the night and is never heard of again. And so the next guy, whatever he does, he's going to be taking heat one way or the other. And let's say, just for the sake of argumentation, that the next guy is not as conservative. And the chances, obviously, from my perspective, the chances are far greater that the next person, the next cardinal, probably, who will be elected as pope, is not going to be as conservative as the current pontiff. And so what is going to be incumbent upon us? Let's say he... well, here, this is a real obvious one. Look at the topic of the debate that we're going to be doing. So much of the theological community of Roman Catholicism is very much in love with the concept of inclusivism. The majority of theologians, as far as I can tell, are inclusivists today. Within Roman Catholicism and within liberal Protestantism as well, the uniqueness of the gospel message of union with Christ is just simply, you know, that's old style. That's offensive to postmoderns. And so, you know, how will evangelicalism respond if you see in the pontiff a much more open and official establishment of the continuing degradation of Roman Catholic theology on this point? And I do consider it degradation. I mean, it's one thing to say Rome is wrong about justification, which it is. It's one thing to say Rome is wrong about the Mass and the Atonement, which, of course, it is, and to say it has no gospel at all. But I've always found it considerably easier to talk to a Roman Catholic who actually believed those things than to talk to the liberal Roman Catholic who doesn't really believe what Rome has taught all along and is willing to look back upon the clear statements that have come forth in the Roman Magisterium over the years concerning the absolute necessity, extra ecclesiam nulla salus. What did that mean? And it's not impossible. Only postmoderns think that it's impossible to find out what someone believed by that, what that meant to them. You can just stand back and go, okay, this person said it. How then did they act? Did they engage in ecumenical dialogue the way that Rome does today? Did they accept schismatics and heretics as brothers and sisters in Christ and all the rest of this stuff? And it's obvious, so clear, that they did not back in the day. And in fact, you can go right through to the papal syllabus of errors in the 1800s and 19th century. And what that meant was fairly clear. But that's changed now. And you have to really engage in historical revisionism to not see that that has changed. And it's hard to talk to those folks. It's like nailing Jell-O to the wall because there's no substance. You can't hold them accountable to anything. You can quote anything you want to quote from historical documents, and it's all subject to the death of 1,000 qualifications. And, of course, they look at you and go, well, now you're just being way too... You know, you're just being way too stringent here. You're not allowing the magisterium and the theologians to interpret words and, you know, all the rest of this stuff that they throw around. So let's say, just for the fun of it, that the next pope is very liberal, or at least more liberal, and we see a movement toward the concept of inclusivism being very much established as the official position of the church, not just functionally as it is already, but in a dogmatic way. Is evangelicalism prepared? We can't even get inclusivists out of ETS. We've got Clark Pinnock running around. How on earth are we supposed to respond meaningfully to Roman Catholicism? What about the conservative Catholic who becomes very disillusioned and recognizes, you know what? What this pontiff is teaching now is directly contradictory to what was taught by pontiffs for literally hundreds and hundreds of years. And the logical reasoning would be if for hundreds, nay, thousands of years, well, at least over 1,000 years, people that I consider to be the vicars of Christ taught X, and the person claiming to be a vicar of Christ today is teaching not X, then the logical result of that is what? Well, the guy today is the guy who's out of the loop, not the people who taught something consistently for a long, long time. And so are we going to be in any position to speak to those people? Not if you're, you know, part of this... you know, anti-intellectual evangelicalism that doesn't believe that, if you're running around saying, well, you know, it doesn't really matter what you believe, and as long as we just say Jesus three times, you're not going to be in any position to talk to these people, are you? Of course not. Is evangelicalism in a position to respond to whatever happens in the changes that are right around the corner? It's odd. Wouldn't it be really, really interesting? I'm going to be in Rome in the middle of March. Wouldn't it be interesting if I get to see the puff of smoke? That would be very, very interesting. For those of you who don't know what that is, that's the means by which it is announced that the cardinals have elected a new pope. Is this puff of smoke is released? And I'm a little surprised that the environmentalists haven't gotten all over that one yet. But anyway, I have a feeling that's not too far down the road. And this has prompted all sorts of discussions, by the way, in light of the great expansion of medical technology that was not a part of human history until just the past few decades, about the idea of a pope remaining pope until death. Because with extraordinary means, you can literally deprive the Roman Catholic Church of its chosen leadership for years on end, by utilization of technology. And so it's raised all sorts of issues, not so much about euthanasia, of course, as it's raised issues concerning what? Concerning succession, concerning the concept of having a pontiff who is able to, in essence, resign the office. And why shouldn't that be? Really is a question a lot of people are asking. Why shouldn't that be something that would be considered? And in fact, allowed for. That's a good question too. So anyway, I just think there are going to be opportunities heading our direction. I think we need to be prepared to give an answer for the hope that's within us, and yet do so, remember what Peter said, with gentleness and reverence. And that's brings me back all the way to the comments that I've seen made that I'm not certainly going to repeat in any way, concerning the current situation. And it's just like, where's the reverence part there? Where's the gentleness and reverence part? I don't understand it. As soon as I saw one, I sat here going, how am I going to address this? Because this is, you know, I don't want to really just offend somebody right out of their socks, but at the same time, that's just not right. It's just, no, that's just not how to approach it. So anyway, 877-753-3341 is the phone number. I was, as those of you who've been looking at my blog know, for some odd reason, my volume's sliding. I'm not sure why it is, but anyways, I've been doing the reinstall Windows, reinstall your programs thing. Man, that is a pain. Ay. Especially when I found out what specifically was causing the problem that we couldn't have found out if we hadn't, you know, reinstalled. It was just one of those hindsight things where once you reinstall and you're doing something, look at that. Oh my goodness, you know, why isn't that program consistent with Service Pack 2 and all that stuff? And by the way, all of you Unix, Linux, Mac folks, I said close the email, not send the email. Okay? We've been getting the emails. We've been getting the emails from you Mac users, you Mac cultists. We've been getting the Linux stuff, you know, and believe me, I've got a button now. You try calling in here, I can get rid of you real fast. That's all there is to it. There is just no functional way that I would be able to leave XP Professional. You just don't have any idea how many programs I've got that do so many different things. I am a gadget person. I have got gadgets. I've got my Palm T3 sitting over here, and I've got my infrared port over here, and my cameras and my cell phone and all that stuff is XP Pro. I mean, I'm stuck with PC, man. I've been on a PC since the first one, which had a tiny little green screen and was running at 4.77 megahertz. All right, so there ain't no leaving at this point, because it would just be silly. So anyway, I'm doing all this stuff. I've lost all my bookmarks. I'm going to have to reestablish all my RSS feeds. I've lost all that stuff. I had 27 RSS feeds going, and they're gone. I forgot to save my bookmarks. I've never done this before. In fact, those of you who know something about technology, and some of you are now going to sleep, but I'll be quick. Some of you know something about these, know that we had been dodging the bullet for a long, long time. And what I mean by that is my body of data, you know, we've gone through lots of hard drives, we've gone through lots of system boards, we've gone through lots of computers. We do it all ourselves. But that body of data that we move from hard drive to hard drive, from system to system, goes way back. It was minimally, an upgrade from Win 98 to Win 2K to Win XP Pro. And those who do this stuff a lot say, no, why don't you just do a clean install and then reinstall everything? And I kept saying, you have no idea how long. Oh, believe me, yes, I skipped Windows ME. That was not even a Windows operating system, people. That was Win98 Service Pack 3 undebugged. that was just the worst thing that was ever thrown out there. But anyway, we had actually dodged a bullet for a long time. You're normally not supposed to be able to upgrade, and actually have it work. And we finally ran to something that just, you know, we tried to put a new motherboard in it that is supposed to be just super high speed and all that stuff. And so I was sitting here, and I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I wasn't overly happy starting the program because now Norton is causing me all sorts of difficulties. I've deinstalled it twice, and it says it's still there and won't reinstall. And so now I can't send email. And so, no, I'm not, you know, I'm beating on this thing with a sledgehammer at the moment, and we'll get it fixed one way or another. Some of you are going, I'm glad you can't send email. But anyways, as I was saying, I've lost all my RSS feeds, but I at least was looking at one of the feeds I used to get because I'm going to try to find the little program that will work with Mozilla Firefox and use that in the future. But did y'all notice the discussion of the member of Korn, KORN? You've seen the things on Windows of people going by that are their music so loud that it's causing the windows to bow. Boom, 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 you know, I hate those things. And just read a little note. It said Brian Welch, founding guitarist of the heavy metal rock group Korn, has left the band after converting to Christianity. A statement on the band's website explains Korn has parted ways with guitarist Brian Head Welch, who has chosen the Lord Jesus Christ as his Savior and will be dedicating his musical pursuits to that end. Welch allegedly cited moral objections to some of the group's lyrics. Some of the group's lyrics? Welch allegedly cited moral objections to some of the group's lyrics and videos as reason for his departure and said in a radio interview, I think if kids, if they want to go and, you know, listen to Korn and stuff, then good, but there's happiness too, you know, after the anger, end quote. Well, obviously we pray that the Lord has indeed done a work of grace in Brian Welch's heart. but there is something there about the idea of there's happiness after the anger. And that is that is rather interesting. So, anyways, also did you see that there is a PG version of The Passion coming out? The Christian Booksellers Association website says that a new non-R-rated version of The Passion of the Christ will be released for the Easter season. Between 5 and 6 minutes, the most violent images from Mel Gibson's movie on the death of Jesus will be edited out. Unfortunately, we cannot get an Orthodox version of The Passion, which gets rid of all the Marian stuff and all the rest of that stuff that went with it along the way. 877-753-3341. I've got to get used to where my clock is now. It's back in the task bar instead of floating around. I could move that, but it's just, you know, right now, main thing is to try to get functionality back, which I had until Norton decided to go nuts. And so the next stop is Reg Edit, which means we will be reinstalling the whole thing here fairly soon, unfortunately. Actually, I probably need to deinstall Ghost first, see if I can get rid of all of it that way, and then go Reg Edit. And anyway, no fun, folks. We're going to go ahead and take a break. We have one caller online, and we'll take your calls at 877-753-3341. We'll be right back right after this.
A godly man is such a rarity today. So many stars, strong and true, quickly fall away.
Under the guise of tolerance, modern culture grants alternative lifestyle status to homosexuality. Even more disturbing, some within the church attempt to revise and distort Christian teaching on this behavior. In their book, The Same-Sex Controversy, James White and Jeff Neal write for all who want to better understand the Bible's teaching on the subject, explaining and defending the foundational Bible passages that deal with homosexuality, including Genesis, Leviticus, and Romans. Expanding on these scriptures, they refute the revisionist arguments, including the claim that Christians today need not adhere to the law. In a straightforward and loving manner, they appeal to those caught up in a homosexual lifestyle to repent and to return to God's plan for his people. The Same-Sex Controversy, defending and clarifying the Bible's message about homosexuality. Get your copy in the bookstore at aomin.org.
Alaska, the unspoiled land of nature and immensity. Both in its realities and its possibilities, Alaska can stir our hearts and minds like no other place on earth. Join us this summer for the 2005 Alpha and Omega Ministries Alaskan Cruise as we cruise the inside passage to the great land of Alaska with Dr. James White and Christian recording artist Steve Camp as they explore the great doctrine of sola scriptura. For our guests, the journey north is an odyssey of glorious landscapes and majestic wildlife as we sail on the luxury five-star Sun Princess by towering glaciers into some of the most remarkable points on Earth. All this, and at prices beginning at $624 per person, plus port taxes and fees, half the price of other offerings to Alaska with other groups. Contact us today at aomin.org or at 877-SOV-CRUISE.
Millions of petitioners from around the world are imploring Pope John Paul II to recognize the Virgin Mary as co-redeemer with Christ, elevating the topic of Roman Catholic views of Mary to national headlines and widespread discussion. In his book, Mary, Another Redeemer, James White sidesteps hostile rhetoric and cites directly from Roman Catholic sources to explore this volatile topic. He traces how Mary of the Bible, esteemed mother of the Lord, obedient servant, and chosen vessel of God, has become the immaculately conceived, bodily assumed Queen of Heaven, viewed as co-mediator with Christ and now recognized as co-redeemer by many in the Roman Catholic Church. Mary, Another Redeemer, is fresh insight into the woman the Bible calls blessed among women and an invitation to single-minded devotion to God's truth. You can order your copy of James White's book, Mary, Another Redeemer, at aomin.org.
This portion of The Dividing Line has been made possible by the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. The Apostle Paul spoke of the importance of solemnly testifying of the gospel of the grace of God. The proclamation of God's truth is the most important element of his worship in his church. The elders and people of the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church invite you to worship with them this coming Lord's Day. The morning Bible study begins at 9:30 a.m. and the worship service is at 10:45. Evening services are at 6:30 p.m. on Sunday, and the Wednesday night prayer meeting is at 7. The Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church is located at 3805 North 12th Street in Phoenix. You can call for further information at 602-26-GRACE. If you're unable to attend, you can still participate with your computer and real audio at prbc.org, where the ministry extends around the world through the archives of sermons and Bible study lessons available 24 hours a day.
How the Pilgrim's Progress is not an easy way. It's a journey to the sun, day by day. Following Jesus is a walk of praise.
And welcome back to The Dividing Line. I was just noticing in channel someone brought up something more about the Korn guitarist, Welch, who had left, that said Welch is scheduled to speak at church services this weekend at Valley Bible Fellowship in Bakersfield. And I went, that's not good. He does not need to be speaking. But it's a great story. No. That's where we ruin these people. How many people have you seen who claim to have a conversion experience and they come out of something like this and immediately they're on the road and they're traveling around and they're telling their story? We don't need the story. Maybe down the road, that man needs to be in church. He needs to grow. He needs to be grounded. He's been living in a worldview that is so far removed from the Bible and from Christianity that you can't just assume that he's ready to go. No, there's going to be a process of change. There's going to be a process of growth. And the man needs to be around mature Christians, not traveling, doing the show thing again. Why do we need this? Why do we want to hear stories like this? I want to hear about what it was like. Why? Don't we have enough good stories in our own churches? Isn't it better to hear about a Christian who was raised in the faith and who was kept out of all that stuff? So I just see that and go, man, I could be wrong. Maybe that's the church he's at. I don't know. But if this isn't the church where he is being discipled, why is he out there on the road? Why is he doing that? This isn't the time for that. It's time to grow. It's time to become grounded. That's just seems rather practical to me. 877-753-3341. Let's head up to where I'm going to be in October. Stretch, stretch, stretch while hitting the palm T3 and going to month view and going October 14th, 15th, and 16th for the Bible conference up there in Omaha, Nebraska, and talk to Paul. Hi, Paul. Hello, Paul. Hey. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. How's it going, Dr. White?
Doing good.
I was recently on the Catholic Answers forums.
I'm sorry.
I was on the Catholic Answers forum.
No, I said I'm sorry.
Oh, nice. Apollonio Latar responded with an interesting argument that I hadn't seen before.
Oh.
I was just asking him to exegete Romans 4, you know, the man working and the man not working. And he brought up a... He said that Paul is dealing with the Judaizers in Romans 3, and this extends into Romans 4. And even though works is not paired with of law, he says that's his argument here. And it seems like it should be easy to defeat at the core. I just wondered if you had some insight into this or heard this argument before, and how would you handle it?
I just discovered that the Bible Works reset itself back to the King James Version here. That's really depressing. I don't understand what the argument was. You're going to have to try to explain that a little more clearly to me to see what the argument is in regards to Romans 4.
Okay, yeah. He starts off and he actually quotes from The God Who Justifies.
Okay, that's nice.
And uses, from page 205, he uses translation for if Abraham was declared righteous by the works of the law, is something to boast about.
Okay, all right.
And so he says that he has to go and use your book. And I don't have my book handy, so I'm not sure if you're actually quoting from Romans 4 there. I don't think so, because I don't believe.
No, first of all, I didn't I used the NET there, and I don't believe that the NET translates that as works of the law. Let me bring it up here.
Yeah.
It does. Works the law. Yeah.
So he uses that to say, well, then that shows that we're talking about works of the Torah here. And then he says, even
so, you can be justified by works other than of the Torah.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah.
Then he just takes that into and he just backs it up then and just asserts that Romans 3 now is dealing with the Judaizers and. So therefore, he's not dealing with justification by faith alone, but he's just specifically dealing with those who demanded that people become Jews before they can become Christians. And, you know, I don't see that in the text. It's pretty clear that he's reading something into it. But I was just curious what you thought about all that.
Well, a couple things. First of all, your modern Catholic apologists are, especially under the influence of people like Art Cipo and others, trying to grab hold of the New Perspective stuff and using it only as far as it is useful to them to use it, but not taking it so far as New Perspectivists do, because obviously the New Perspective perspective would be contradictory to both the historic Protestant position as well as the Roman Catholic position, and as such, they can only use certain elements of New Perspectivism. And so it's actually an old argument to try to say that all that's being addressed by Paul is doing works which specifically, well, there's two forms of it. The better form, which is more advanced than certain people you might be dialoguing with would understand, the better form and the older form of it is, well, what's going on here really is Paul's only talking about ceremonial laws. He's not talking about fulfilling the commands of Christ or the laws of Christ as we understand them and interpret them. And so they try to make a distinction within law between ceremonial and moral, and basically saying all Paul's talking about when he talks about namas, when he talks about Torah, is the ceremonial aspect. And that actually has some connections to certain elements of the New Perspective concept, those specifically, that are focused upon the idea that what you've got going on here are the national symbols of Judaism, and that you're just dealing with the idea of becoming a Jew before you become a Christian, so on and so forth, joining into the covenant, bearing the covenant signs, so on and so forth. Now, this idea that it's, well, this is just Torah, if he's not making that distinction, if he's just saying, well, this is just the Old Testament law, is a much less nuanced idea that I normally hear from Mormons more than I hear from anybody else. Because it's fairly obvious as soon as you make that kind of statement, you're saying, so what you're saying then is that Paul believed that there was a Torah above the Torah, and that you're not justified by keeping the lesser Torah, which is the law of God of the Old Testament, but you are justified by keeping the greater Torah, which maybe would be the Namas Christu, the law of Christ, or Namu Christu. It all depends on, you know, I don't know where he would go to have this defined, where it is so distinctively kept away from the use of law that he uses here. But the problem is, let me see here. There it is. Let me just look at something real briefly here. You can hum a happy tune in the background here. I don't believe... Is that...
I wasn't that happy. Sorry about that.
It sounded like the theme to Gilligan's Island, too. So
I caught myself, and I thought, well, let's change it up, but it was too late.
Too late. Okay, thank you very much for your assistance, though. Yeah, I didn't think that there was. There's no textual variant there. And so, why, you know, that, hold on a second. I'm going backwards here for a second, and I'm now reaching way down behind, and there, I've got it. It's nice having everything around here. I need to get that sound and that song and use it as what I'm looking for something here.
No, you don't. You're going to find something else.
You know what? Now, this is really unusual. I'm looking at the NET, and the NET, if it is anything, it is note-heavy. It has lots and lots of notes. And guess what? There's no note. There's no no discussion, no note. Why they translate simply... ex ergon, as if the phrase of law is coming after that. And so that's really interesting. You know what? I know who to ask, but I would certainly disagree with that rendering. It is
sure.
Is certainly out of the context of the rest of the English translations. that is an interpretation that what's interesting to me is that when you ask why doesn't he put of law into the Greek text when he's writing this to the Romans, I think it comes out by the fact that we're talking about Abraham here. And we're talking about the law of Moses. So there would be an anachronistic application there. And then his application in verses 3 and following demonstrate that he's not talking about works of law. That's how you, if you want to really provide a full response to Mr. Latar within the context of the Catholic Answers Forum, so what I would say is, now, if your understanding is the right understanding, then where you're missing it here is look at how he then continues it. When he speaks of works in verse 4, now to the one who works, is he talking about works of law here? No, his wage is credited as a favor, not as a favor, but as what is due. He uses a secular standard employment question, shall we say, an illustration here. And in doing so, he makes it very clear that he's talking about works in the concept of receiving a wage, putting God in the position of being a debtor, and then contrasts the receiving of the wage being by grace, is credited as a favor, and not as what is due. It is not as a debt. And so then he contrasts that with saving faith in the next verse. And so I like to try, whenever someone tries a neat little, I don't know, backdoor escape, in essence, I like to try to fit it into the text and demonstrate where consistently reading it that way the rest of the way through is going to cause all sorts of issues and problems and difficulties for them. And but it is interesting. I'm very glad to see I didn't even notice it, mainly because probably there's a good example. For example, if you want to apply this to the issue of textual criticism, if I had been writing Romans 4:2 and copying it from an NET, I would not have put of law, because I have it memorized in the New American Standard. And since that's what I was accustomed to, I'm sure that I just would have written that verse out and not even seen it in any way, shape, or form, because it's just so unusual. It is outside the context. And so anyway, but that's how I would respond, is I would take that down and demonstrate that doesn't work whatsoever with the context as we have it there. Okay?
That's great. Thanks.
All righty, man. Thanks for calling.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. God bless. Bye-bye. 877-753-3341 is the phone number. Man, all the fonts are changed. Oh, it looks terrible. It is endless. Gotta get Bible Works put back together again. I was actually getting the Greek text up and all the rest of that stuff. It's sort of sad when it just comes up with the King James. I mean, it's nothing against King James, but it's like, why have Bible Works if all you're going to look at is King James? You know, there's lots of free programs out there that'll do that. Anyways, 877-753, I look over at my little console there, and there are no little lights ringing away. Well, lights don't really ring, but you know what I mean. So I think I will take now this may not even work, now that I think about it, because we haven't tested it. And has anyone heard Dr. James White and Ann McKinney's discussion? There's no taping of my discussion of anything with Ann McKinney?
Sure is.
What?
Yes.
What?
You were, I think, on KTAR or KFYI many years ago. Yes, I think it's number 408.
What?
Yeah.
No. Ann McKinney?
Yeah. Of the American Atheist Society, as I recall.
Mm-mm. No.
No, that's number 430. Number 430, yeah.
And what's the name? You talk about Dennis McKenzie.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I think so.
I got that off of the recording. That's yeah, she was not nice.
Man, I that.
But yeah, there is. We got it. It was recorded.
I.
What can you say, man? You know.
No, I. Well. I'm going to have to hear that one myself because I don't have the slightest recollection of anything like that at all.
Wow, amazing.
None. Zip, zero. 4:30, huh?
Yep, James White versus Ann McKinney of Fundamentalist Anonymous.
Yeah, it doesn't... I remember the Fundamentalist Anonymous discussion. That was with...
Live Secular Phoenix Call-In Radio.
Yeah, that was with Bob Mohan.
Yep. Yep. That was a long time ago, but it's still fun to listen to.
I'm going to have to listen to that because my recollection was of a male.
So many different debates back then with different atheists and skeptics.
That just doesn't make any... Yeah. Doesn't ring any bells at all. I remember Bob Mohan sitting there puffing away.
Obviously, she was a forgettable person.
Well, because more of the argument was with Bob Mohan than with anybody else.
Yeah.
The person on the other side of the phone was irrelevant. It was you could tell Bob Mohan just detested anything that had to do with fundamentalism at all. Yeah.
That was recorded.
Hmm.
We got it.
Interesting.
I highly recommend it. In fact, it's very entertaining.
Oh, well, I'll have to listen to it myself.
Yes, you should. In fact, you could get it for, what, $1.50 at the MP3 store.
Actually, my network works. I can pull it through the network right now if I want to. If it's around there someplace, I can search around for it and eventually find it. So.
Alrighty.
Well, thank you very much.
You're
welcome. I happened to see that scroll by, and I'm like, what? Because I thought it was in reference to the fact that I mentioned... I don't remember what I mentioned, or even what context I mentioned, running into Dan Barker.
Oh, yeah, we got that one, too.
Outside the studios. That was KFYI. That was Tom Likas.
Oh, yeah.
I was like 21.
Now, that's one I wish we had a recording of.
Well, yeah. No, we would not be able to sell it. It would violate... it would be R-rated, and not because of me, let me assure you. So, it was, it was quite the interesting experience. Yeah, we did a lot of that stuff back there, and I don't know if we should still be making that stuff available. I was half the age I am now. I just realized that. That was 21 years ago. 21 years ago. That's sad. Time passes by so quickly. That's one of the reasons why it seems like such a waste to be spending that time sitting at a computer going, why did the font change? Why won't Norton deinstall? What's going on? That kind of stuff. That's just seems like, I don't know. So what you're telling me is I'm going to have to deinstall Ghost, and then I'm going to have to go in the registry and look for anything that says Norton and kill it. And then maybe I'll be able to get it all, but that's great. That's wonderful. When we're a big, huge ministry someday, I'm gonna have techies. They're just gonna do this stuff.
Yeah, they're gonna walk in and say, "Okay, Doc, we gotta wipe the disk."
Yeah, no. Their whole job will be to make sure that when I tweak a system, it stays tweaked. Which means we do lots of ghost backups. Actually, you know what? I honestly would not even let somebody do that. Even if we had somebody, I don't know that I would allow anybody to do that. You know me, hands on my computer. I want to do that stuff. So anyway, that's what I'll be doing that right after the program is what we'll be doing. It's a techie for hire. Yeah, we've got Sammy in New Jersey. Sammy needs a job. And, so we might be able to get Sammy out here. And he'd work for cheap. Yeah. Something tells me. I could have him a room with Josh, and we could go from there. He's pretty skinny, so I don't think he eats a lot. And what? I just saw his reasonable offer for a salary there, and it was misspelled. I love when somebody's off asking for a certain salary and they misspell it. I'll word for books. Now, I'll tell you something. Sammy's I thought we had a caller. I was stretching here. Sammy's trying to take over Wonky's position and channel. There's no two ways about that. but I'll word for books. That's Sammy. Well, great.
Well, I didn't think that the question could be answered in this short of time, but if your game, the gentleman wanted to know what your thoughts were on Gordon Clark's solution to the problem of evil.
Oh, having a clue.
So you have 30 seconds.
Having a clue.
Okay.
I don't read Gordon Clark.
That was short.
You know, I read a little bit of him a while back, but I'll be honest. I'm probably negatively influenced here by the fact that some of the weirdest people I've ever run into were big fans of his. And there's been some good folks that were, honestly, but some of the folks that I've talked to over the years that were just not really going with the flow real well were real big into that, and I just sort of made me go, so I will gladly confess I haven't a clue.
So the gentleman's currently reading Gordon Clark's book.
Well, he's written many books.
Are you insinuating that something might happen to him after?
No. I have no idea. If someone said, did Gordon Clark come up with a different solution to the problem of evil than Reformed theology in as a whole has, I would go, psh, haven't foggiest. Don't know. Don't know.
But it was that wild-eyed thing, you know. But.
I don't know, you know. I do not claim all knowledge, and you know, people go, wow, I'm really surprised you haven't read that. Well, when would I do all this? You know, that's what I was. I tried talking about this in channel a couple days ago, and I sort of got my head handed to me on a platter. But you know, there are people who only study one little narrow area, and they can know everything there is to know about that area. And so there are people who know more than me in any area that I address. There's no question about that. But do they know as wide an area of knowledge as I know? Most of them don't. And so you've got your specialists, and you've got your generalists, and you've got people in the middle. I'm in the middle. My area is apologetics, and I put, you know, effort into that area. But there are always going to be somebody who knows nothing about Mormonism, nothing about Jehovah's Witnesses, nothing about major world religions, nothing about Islam, nothing about the Quran, but they know more than me about subject X. And as a result of that, I must be wrong about everything else. That's something that I encounter very, very frequently. And so, no, would I like to sit around and get to read that kind of stuff and not have to read a lot of the garbage I do? Yeah, sure. But not what the Lord's brought into my life. I've got to do what you got to do, you know, and you've got to study what you got to study. And frequently, that's not, you know, the funnest thing. Just like reading the channel right now isn't overly fun. I thought I had friends in channel, but I don't. And so I'm just going to, you know, kick them all out and sit there in the channel all by myself. And that's how it's all going to work out. Anyway, today's Thursday. Yeah, today's Thursday. And Tuesday, Thursday next week are fine. It's the week after that is really questionable because I'm going to be speaking back in St. Louis. I think it's on a Tuesday, Wednesday. Might be back in time on Thursday. Not sure. It's going to start getting really spotty. Let's put it that way. Especially with England coming up and things like that. So, anyways, we should be here at 11 o'clock Tuesday morning. And obviously, if something is developed in regards to the Pope and things like that, we'll be right on it. Right here on the Dividing Line. We'll see you then.
Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-4602 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org.
where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracks. Join us again next Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. for The Dividing Line.